Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We're back with more of the Instigators presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
All right, it's 11:30. If you're looking for Darren Dreger, you can find him right here on the Instigators, along with myself, Marty Biron, and the great Paul Hamilton joins us today. Dregs, what's going on? Say hi to our man, Paul Hamilton.
Hey, Paul. Hope everything is well. It is hot here. I'm sure it's hot there. I'm supposed to play golf this afternoon. I'm contemplating not playing golf this afternoon with a humidex of well over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. So I've got a tough decision to make. That's about as difficult as my day gets.
Well, Dregs, it's good to talk to you again. What is that in Celsius, the 90 to 100 40. Degrees?
Yeah, well, 40. I mean, it's 32 on my truck right now, but with the Humidex, it's pushing 40, 42 Celsius.
Hey, Dregs, how about you get out and play a round of golf? I played it yesterday at 4 o'clock. It was really comfortable.
Yeah. I'm planning, Marty. I don't know. It's going to be a big hydration day today, to be sure. I'm going to have to throw in a couple of waters with the Bud Light this afternoon.
Well, speaking of hot, Lindy Ruff's the devil.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of speculation about, you know, the candidates were that were likely going to get the job. And Lindy's name was introduced early, and I don't think anyone was at all surprised that the New Jersey Devils went that direction. But first they had to retain Tom Fitzgerald as general manager. I mean, you can't have an interim general manager hire a coach and then ownership go a different direction with management. That's dysfunctional. So when they retain Fitzy, then you look at the relationship between Fitzgerald and Lindy Ruff, and there's a pretty big history there, those two gentlemen. Well, Lindy Ruff was in heady footing. I mean, there were a number of really qualified candidates, and Peter Laviolette, formerly of the Nashville Predators, was among them. So I like the hire. You know, you guys know Lindy Ruff very, very well as former coach of the Buffalo Sabres. The one thing he's going to bring to a young team in New Jersey is accountability and stability, and I think they could use both.
Stability, you know, I'm just trying to just keep playing off everything we're doing here. When you say stability, it sounds like there's stability with the PA and the league in terms of a CBA, but are we going to hear everything get ratified for the return to play? Anything, any bumps in the road, or you think that'll be smooth sailing?
I think it's going to be smooth sailing, Petey. You know, not to say that there haven't been bumps in the road. I mean, that's what, you know, full-scale negotiations about. And how convoluted and complex was this one? Because it wasn't just about the return-to-play protocols and the hub cities and the CBA. I mean, it was everything. It was everything included in that. So, you know, this stuff can be eye-glazing at the best of times. You know, you pour yourself into trying to learn the collective bargaining agreement. I mean, I can't tell you a number of times that I've fallen asleep at night, historically speaking, trying to go through parts of the existing CBA. So then you add on the return to play protocols and the back and forth between the Players Association and the National Hockey League, the concerns, you know, the players, not just the players on the committee, but, you know, the reps around the National Hockey League. And they take that back to Don Fear and the executive director. And then you get into the collective bargaining agreement, and it seems like you're right at that finish line. And then maybe the league comes back and says, well, we like it, and we're okay with giving you this, but we need that, you know, in return. And then you add another layer, and days go by. So in a long-winded way, I guess I want to give credit to all involved, because to get through the mountain of work that they've had to go through to get to today, where the vote from the full membership should be completed, there's a Board of Governors conference call. So we could have full ratification of everything I've just said by later today, late afternoon or early evening.
Dregs, baseball made a mess of their negotiations in public between the players and the league and everything. How cognizant was the NHL of that to kind of keep their business behind closed doors, knowing that there had to be cooperation to get this done and to get it done after the PR nightmare baseball had?
Right. You know, I don't know that the league or the Players Association, hockey related, were too concerned with what was going on with baseball. But I think that they learned something in dealing with COVID-19, you know, especially in the early stages, where they both sides recognize, certainly the leaders, you know, Bettman and Don Fear recognized the only way to work through this was to do so with solidarity and do so arm in arm. And perhaps that carried over into the final negotiations of the collective bargaining agreement. I mean, it's important to note that negotiations on the CBA had started before the pause, you know, in mid-March. So they had some of the work done, but I think that both sides recognized very quickly that the tens of millions, well, now north of $1 billion in lost revenue, wasn't going to get resurrected or corrected in a timely or short time fashion. And the only way to fix it, try and fix it together, to work hand in hand so that they can get the sport of hockey back in a healthy place. I'm not suggesting that there wasn't some tough conversations. There had to have been. But I don't think that they were overly concerned with what baseball was doing. I don't know if amused is the right way, but I think that they would recognize, as all of us have, that there's a wrong way to do it, and that is to have, you know, all of the public outcry and the scrutiny and the negative publicity that has been earned by Major League Baseball in this process. Guaranteed hockey wanted no part of that.
Well, some of the players spoke out, Dregs, and they were like, oh, we don't want to go. And Justin Williams in Carolina is worrisome of players testing positive. When they ratify this return to play and the new CBA, will the Players Association and the league put out the numbers saying 95% of our players voted yes or no or whatnot? Will we know that? I think that will be telling to me anyway.
Yeah.
If everybody was on board.
Yeah, I don't know that either the Players Association or the NHL would know what the vote was beyond majority. But you know, we're going to dig around. We're going to poke around, and you know, there are going to be Players Association sources, be it, you know, player representatives, player agents, you know, go down the list that will acknowledge that, yeah, it was a majority, but it wasn't an overwhelming majority, or it was an overwhelming majority. So we could see percentages. I'd be a bit surprised if it was broken down that specifically in numbers. But to your point, Marty, I think we're gonna have players who opt out. They are, and for their own personal reasons, where, you know, be it their own personal safety or the safety of family members, whatever. I mean, I think we'd be naive to expect that there aren't going to be players. I don't think that there are going to be a big number of players. And I don't know what my read is on that. And maybe that changes in the days ahead. I know we're not that far away from the opening of training camp, which is July 9th. But I can tell you that these are nervous days for the NHL and for the Players Association, because you have to monitor and pay attention to the numbers that are staggering in the United States. I mean, it's staggering. And then, you know, Edmonton is, you know, a hub city, haven't officially been named as a hub city by the NHL or the Players Association, but then they've got an outbreak in an Edmonton hospital that has some pretty significant numbers attached to it. So now the NHL is going to work there. The NHL, the PA just want to get to phase four. If they can get to phase four and get to the hub cities, and they feel like that's going to be the safest place for the players, for the personnel, for all involved. but they've got to get there. They've got to get there. And so it's not just the league and the PA that are monitoring everything that's going on with the coronavirus. Obviously, individual players, especially those with underlying conditions, or veteran players like Justin Williams, who've been around, and they can read the tea leaves, and they've got family that they have to consider and be worried about as well. You know, they'll make their decisions when the time comes.
Yeah. How about the third and fourth goalies that are going to have to go and maybe ride this thing out, and they may not even play?
Yeah. Well, it's going to be tricky, to be sure. But you're right. They may not play. But who doesn't think that there's going to be a pretty high number of muscle pulls, groin strains, all of that kind of stuff? I mean, you guys know this better than I do, of course. I mean, there's a big difference between skating somewhat casually, even though these guys are trying to train as hard as they possibly can, and then being game ready. So, you know, expanded rosters, you know, that's why they're going to do it. And maybe that, you know, applies to the goalies as well, who might have the toughest position after such a long layoff.
Dregs, I detect a little skepticism in your voice.
In what sense?
Just in the sense, and I'm yeah. I'm very much the same way. Like, one of the questions I have is, and it's not just for you, it's for everyone. When will we actually believe that this is actually going to happen? Because, you know, Bob McKenzie, as you've touched on all of this, but all the concerns, but he's brought up the travel. You know, how many more cases could we see, you know, a guy traveling and then you get inside the training camp and then you test positive, and does it spread through the team? Like there are still a lot of, like, there's not much wiggle room here.
No. And you're right. I am a bit skeptical. And I think you have to remain that way again until game one is played. Until we get to August 1st and they're playing games. And, you know, then what happens when somebody, whether it's a player, personnel, you know, some of the help staff that are going to be massive numbers of people who are involved in this process, what happens when there are positive tests inside that hub city environment? How is the NHL going to respond to that? Provincially, how is Alberta going to respond to that? How is Ontario going to respond to that? So I think it's fair to be somewhat skeptical. But I'm reminded of a conversation I had with Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly very early in the process. And he said, look, you know, if the health authorities who are guiding us through this process told us point blank, look, if there's a positive test in the hub city, in the safe environment, then you have to shut down, we probably wouldn't engage. And this going back several weeks now, you know, he made that comment. So there's a level of confidence in me that pushes away the skepticism. But what if it's not one or five or ten tests? What if it's an outbreak in one of the hub cities and in one of those environments? Then what does the NHL do? What do the health authorities, you know, be it Health Canada, again, the province of Alberta, the province of Ontario, the CDC, who? I mean, what if these groups swoop in and say, we can't do this? You know, that's not just specific to hockey. That can be specific to the return of any of the sport we're seeing now. So there's the reason for my skepticism. I want to see the NHL, you know, get through 1920. That's what I want to see. I want to see them get through 1920, go into the mini break, and then see if there's a second wave, as many continue to predict, and then how the league will have to respond at that point. So that's where my skepticism comes from.
How likely are we to see December 1st as the start of the 2020-2021 season then?
Yeah, I mean, fairly likely. And, you know, the League and Players Association feel like that's an adequate break between the conclusion of 1920 and the start of 2021. And, you know, they can get their business done. And if there's a second wave, and who knows if there will be a second wave. I mean, the experts seem to believe that there will be a second wave, but we're still in the first wave. And the United States is definitely still in the first wave. So again, not to plant the seed of doubt, but what if that second wave, you know, hits in November? then all of a sudden you're pushing things back again. There's no way of predicting that. The National Hockey League certainly can't, you know, sit around and sit idle and not get their work done and plan accordingly. So they feel comfortable that they'll be able to go, you know, the start of the 2021 season, December 1st. But, you know, comfortable in the sense that they'll be able to start, or comfortable in the sense that they'll be able to start with at least some fans allowed in the building? Or are they comfortable enough with going with fanless hockey for the foreseeable future? I mean, those are questions that just don't have answers at this point.
TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger joins us on the show. He's at Darren Dreger on Twitter. My last question for you, you're very dialed in. Have you heard of any players, notable players, potentially opting out?
I have, and I can't disclose the identity. I wouldn't. No different than, and maybe I'm in the minority of the journalists out there. You know, Steve Simmons seemed to be offended when he didn't get the appropriate acknowledgement for outing the Toronto Maple Leaf player. Until these players make that decision and alert their team, I don't think it's my position or the position of anyone reporting on it to speculate. But I have heard of one fairly high-level player, yes, who may or may not opt out. And look, his representative told me that he hasn't officially made his decision yet, but assured me that when he officially makes his decision, that we'll find out. So this individual player is certainly contemplating it, as he has from the onset of the virus.
There's been a lot of dates thrown at me. What's the deadline for that decision?
Well, July 13th. I mean, that's been established in the return to play. Now, you know, is it something that, you know, the NHL Players Association can extend and can further contemplate? I believe they can. It's on a case-by-case scenario, but July 13th was established as a date for the opt-out for the players.
Fascinating stuff as always, Dregs. Thanks. We'll keep dialed in. Thanks for your time. We'll talk to you next Friday.
All right, boys. Stay well and stay cool. It's a hot one, as we talked about the onset of the conversation.
Drink your water. Drink your water.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.